tasty.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another war update. I'm kind of doing one of these once a week, every Monday, it looks like. It's Monday today, and I'm going to go through some of the stuff that's been happening in the Iran war, got an update on US-Israeli offensives, Iranian actions. There's so much stuff I've had to write it all down. I'm going to cover the speculation about the US ground invasion and what these troops are that are going there. There's a lot of talk that the 82nd Airborne Division is being sent, as well as some Marines. So we'll talk about that. I've got an update on my long-standing COPE theory that the deep state, that the CIA, Tucker Carlson, and various other actors in the American permanent deep state are not up for this war, are actively trying to undermine it, pin the blame on Israel, and so on and so forth. I've got an update on that too. So we're going to get to all of that. But before we get going, I'll remind everybody, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Buy it now. Bestseller, of course, is The Trivium. I've seen a lot of people this past week, in fact, bought the Mega Bundle, which has got all of the courses that I personally have done in it. It's a good bang for your buck. So a lot of people taking advantage of the Mega Bundle this past week. If you get that plus the Shakespeare one, I think that's everything, all of my courses on there. But there are courses by other people, including a brand new one called Foundations of Geometry, which if you've done the Trivium, you should take that one next to kind of increase your logic skills. All right, that's enough of that. Now, if you excuse me, I've written down a lot of notes, and I'm going to have to have a look here because I put them in Notepad, because I had to copy and paste from different places. So what we're going to do, first of all, is have a look at what each of the two sides have been up to since last we spoke. I'll just say as a top line, okay, if you're just waiting for one takeaway, if you want to shut the video down right now after one little takeaway, I don't really think that much has changed in the past week. We're kind of just, it's a lot more of the same. I've noticed that the US-Israeli side tend to wait to the weekends to do most of their offensives, whereas the Iranian offensives tend to be constant all through the week, all day, every day. But the Americans tend to wait for the weekend, so much so that it has become a meme that, you know, come Monday, Trump comes out with some bullshit to calm the markets down. And then, you know, on the weekend, it's like, death to the Ayatollah, etc. That has become a meme. It's such an obvious pattern. But they did do quite a bit of bombing this past weekend. So let's get through some of that. There was heavy bombing in Tehran. Various different districts were hit, including residential areas, civilians, women and children. A lot of footage went out. And this is one of the things I've noticed with this war, that each of the sides, that is the Iranian side and the Israeli side, they dial up footage that comes out up and down. Okay, and you could argue that they do it for propaganda purposes. I noticed that when Dimona was hit and when the Arad was hit in Israel, a lot of footage came out. Well, this past weekend, we had the opposite situation where we suddenly got an awful lot of footage from Iran. And one thing I will note in the interests of impartiality and value-free analysis, even though I very much am against one side in this conflict, I will still do my best to give you value-free analysis. I noticed that the images coming out of Iran were incredibly high quality, almost like kind of glossy magazine images, and they were beamed out across the world, carried by mainstream media, including the BBC and most of the Western mainstream press within hours of being released. So that was very interesting to watch play out. But it looks like a lot of damage was done to civilian infrastructure. They hit a number of universities, including Tehran University, Isfahan University of Technology. I mean, this is basically the equivalent of bombing MIT in America or Harvard or something like that. Quite why they're hitting these universities is hard to fathom, really. The Iranians have framed it as desperate attacks by America and Israel on Iran's knowledge base. And they're saying, well, you can't bomb knowledge because it's all up here. I did try to find some sort of justification for like why they're doing this. And the best I could find is that they were, you know, maybe they're hoping to find, what's his name? Professor Morandi. Maybe he's hanging out in Tehran University. Quite why they're doing this. I mean, the Israelis will say, oh, well, they're hiding equipment in the university or something like that. Seems to me just wanton destruction, to be honest. I have struggled to find a proper military or strategic reason for hitting these civilian sites. And from Iran's point of view, it does quite good propaganda work for the Iranian side, because they can just say, look, they're trying to do a Gaza in Iran. They're trying to do a Gaza in Iran by, you know, hitting women and children all over again, which has been the dominant narrative over the weekend. They also hit steel manufacturing in Isfahan. This was actually more significant because Iran does produce its own steel. And, you know, if they took out those steel plants, if they, it's not clear if they completely destroyed them or if they simply damaged them. But, you know, they'll have put back some steel manufacturing in Iran, you know, back through those hits. They also continue to hit nuclear-related facilities in Iraq. That's not Iraq, a place called Iraq, A-R-A-K. They hit a yellow cake site in Ardakan and various other installations. So there was a pretty heavy bombing campaign by the, I assume, the Israelis, but I think the Americans are involved in all of these things as well. There was also a drone strike on the Iraqi Kurdistan president, which is interesting because they were trying to convince that same person to sign with them. Now they're hitting him with drone strikes. And this has been condemned as outright terrorism by, you know, the international the axis of resistance, as they call it. They've said that this is just terroristic action, this attack on this Kurdish president. And then there have been threats on Karg Island and the ground operation. I'll come back to that. So, you know, in a nutshell, there's been a bombing campaign over the weekend on various residential districts of Tehran, on educational facilities, universities. Now, one of the things that occurred to me is that Netanyahu's reference to Genghis Khan may have been a kind of foreshadowing of this campaign to hit universities. Because if you remember when Genghis Khan, if you've read in your history books, when Genghis Khan invaded Persia all the way back then, he burnt a library to the ground. And, you know, if Netanyahu is evoking this barbarian Bronze Age mindset, okay, quite how they run that narrative and the idea that they're defending civilization or whatever on the other is difficult to say. I would just say the optics of bombing universities kind of quite hard to defend if you're also going to say we're defending civilization. I mean, hitting universities, okay. I mean, to me, it just seems like yet more low IQ lashing out. Desperation is like, well, we can hit these things, we can do it, so let's do it. I do not see any real strategic purpose. Maybe some of you military geniuses in the chat, in the comments, can explain to me what the purpose of that particular campaign was over the weekend. I can understand the yellow cake, I can understand the steel, and I can understand hitting the nuclear stuff. I do not understand hitting the universities. It just seems stupid. Especially now, Iran has said, well, you've hit our university, so we're going to start hitting your universities. I mean, that's what I expect them to do in the coming days and weeks, because that's what has happened every other time. Whenever something of Iran's is hit, they retaliate and hit, you know, Israeli and Gulf properties, you know, in a tit for tat, eye for an eye kind of logic. Because what they're trying to do is impose a cost. Every action you do to Iran, you will have an equal and opposite cost the other way around. So in terms of what Iran has been doing in what they call Operation True Promise 4, well, a number of significant things has happened on the Iranian side. They're now up to the 86th wave at the time of recording. In fact, at the time of recording, I think the 87th wave has just launched. I rely on the Twitter account Spectator Index to confirm things. I know that sounds kind of a bit feeble, but you can kind of, the Spectator is not exactly Iran friendly. Okay. So if the Spectator is reporting it, my logic is it's definitely happening. That's my logic, because it's an Israel friendly outlet. That's why I go on the Spectator Index to confirm things. But as I hit record on this, I noticed the 87th wave, you know, is currently up and running, and they are hitting, as I speak, Haifa oil refinery. That's the thing. Now, they've hit that before, but they're hitting it again for various different reasons. And that's something to understand, I think, about the conflict in general. So, for example, the Americans hit the steel plant, but that does not mean those steel plants are completely destroyed or completely out of operation. Some part of it may be damaged. Just like the Iranians hit Haifa oil refinery before, but that does not mean it is completely destroyed. Okay, so maybe these things will take multiple waves or multiple hits to actually destroy. I have seen the images, parts of that Tehran University have been reduced to rubble, but remember, it's a university. You know, sorry to get sidelined on this, but I remember before the conflict took place, the sites of anti-regime resistance shared by Mayor Tuzi and various other twerking monarchists, right, in the quote-unquote Iranian diaspora, were always the universities, right? It was the student activists who were the most anti-regime people. Now the place that they go to university, now their actual place of learning, has been bombed and reduced to rubble. How's it looking for those activists? How's it looking for the twerking parvulists? How's it looking for Mayor Tuzi? I mean, he doesn't care, of course, because he's a fully paid up shill. I'm just saying that the before and after when it comes to, you know, okay, we're going to side with these people and they're going to quote unquote liberate Iran. And now the very places that those students were protesting have been destroyed. Where are those students now? What are they up to? How do they feel about this? They can't go to university anymore. 600 schools have been bombed. What was the strategic purpose of that? And how is it a liberation? That narrative has completely fallen apart. And the twerkers, the Iranian diaspora, have discredited themselves, not only in the eyes of other Iranians, but in the eyes of the world. They have made fools of themselves. Basically, this is the fate of any people who end up siding with the Israelis. This is basically what anybody who ends up, they've made MAGA chumps. They've made the diaspora chumps, okay? In their mindset, anybody who trusts another human being is a sucker, right? They're a sucker. That's their mindset. So if you go and willingly ally yourself with them or cozy up to them, expecting to get something, you are, in their own rhetoric, in their own eyes, nothing but a sucker. So you get what you deserve. You get those people who thought they would get something out of this, whether you're MAGA or the twerking diaspora, you get what you deserve. And what do you get? Nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. Over and over and over and over and over again until the world wakes up to what these people are. And by these people, I specifically mean the people in and around this Netanyahu government and the mindset that they have inculcated in the lunatics who run that country at the moment. It's gone rogue, and I'll come back on that in a second. But anyway, let's get back to Operation True Promise 4. So what have Iran been doing? Okay, so we're up to 86 waves now. They keep on hitting multiple targets in Israel. They have hit those sites again, Dimona and Arras. They hit Haifa oil refinery. They completely destroyed another, I think it was an energy plant called, is it Navas? I struggle with some of these names. There was multiple US bases across the region hit in Kuwait, in the UAE, in Bahrain. Various assets of the Fifth Fleet have been hit. They continually pound Tel Aviv. The Eilat satellite station has been hit. Industrial zones in southern Israel have been hit pretty heavily. Now, one significant thing there, which is a development since last I talked, is that the Houthis have joined the fight finally. I don't know why they waited a month, but they finally have arrived. And the Houthis, they haven't done it yet, but they're talking about shutting down the Red Sea. So on top of the Strait of Hormuz being closed, we're also going to get a choke at the Red Sea. That hasn't happened yet as I record this, but they're talking about doing it. What they have been doing, the Houthis, is from Yemen, hitting Israel from the south using rocket launchers, ballistic missiles, and various other things. They're hitting southern Israel. And the reason that's significant is because Hezbollah, back the, you know, somehow resurrected by some necromancer in Lebanon, Hezbollah is back. Israel has had to reroute a lot of their defenses to northern Israel. So if you can imagine, they've rerouted resources up to the north. And as they've done that, the Houthis are hitting them from the south, again, with long-range support from Iranian missiles. That is what is happening on the strategy map in Israel. How much longer Israel can withstand all of this, I don't know. Because those hits in the south, that energy base I mentioned, the Navras, something like that, I saw the images. They were basically coming in with no defense, like there's just no defenses, no intercepts, nothing. It's basically free shots coming in down there in southern Israel from the Houthis and from Iran because they're fighting up in the north. Again, if you're going to keep on fighting, you know, a war on eight fronts, you're going to expect to be stretched, okay? And there have been reports that the IDF is, you know, on the edge, that they're suffering a shortage of men, that they're suffering from exhaustion, from having been fighting for, I mean, don't forget, Israel has just been fighting nonstop for about 3-4 years now, and longer, if you think about it. And they're suffering morale lows, reports of various suicides. So I don't think things are going well from the Israeli perspective. And yet Netanyahu, and I still think he's alive, but a lot of people think he's dead. You know, I think that's slop personally, but, or the Israeli leadership, let's put it that way, only have one gear. They don't know how to take an L. They don't know how to back down. They only have one gear, which is to escalate, to ramp up further. And I put out this tweet. It's had quite a few thousand likes now, that this is symptomatic of low IQ, impulsive, emotional thinking. They haven't understood, okay, the very basics of Lao Tzu. If you read the Tao, right, one of the lessons that comes up again and again and again is that sometimes you need to strategically yield in order to, you know, in order to come back again, strategically yield, strategically give up something, compromise, or, you know, be like the water. But the Israelis aren't like that. They can never yield. They can never admit an L. They can never take anything on the chin. And this makes them bristle. It means they only have one gear. Escalate up, escalate up, escalate up. The thing is, if you have a look at this situation, and I've looked at it from every different angle, I know they've got this Greater Israel project that they're pursuing, okay? At every stage of the way, they just escalate more. And they, and because of this facet of their character, you know, at a moment where they're fighting already on one front with Iran, they take the opportunity to invade Lebanon, okay? So they open up a new front, so they're now fighting in the north. Now a new front has opened up to their south. And in the middle of all of that, you'd think, oh, well, let's look for new allies. Let's look for a way to play this clever. But in the middle of it all, they're saying, oh, Turkey's next. Look out, Turkey, you're next. Okay, so it's always this up again. And in the middle of that, Ben-Gvir is saying, oh, we need to take out the new Syrian guy. Remember, they installed that Syrian guy after the fall of Assad. Now they're saying, oh, he's the head of the snake. We need to take him out. Again, far be it from me. Maybe, as I've said before, I'm only 147 IQ. We're dealing with people who are 3000 IQ here. Okay. And it's beyond the realm of my understanding how that project there is going to succeed in the long term. Because I'm looking at it and thinking, like, this is, how long can you keep that together? I think, you know, 2 years left, I reckon. I reckon those prophecies are right. You know, they talk about the eighth decade and so on. Honestly, I just don't see these plans working. And all of their thinking is short-term and smacks of desperation. And when people try to explain it, it's always like really petty things like, oh, Netanyahu doesn't want to go to jail and things like that. To me, I think this looks like the beginning of the end for this whole thing. That's my take as we stand. Anyway, specifically, what have Iran done? They've hit a surveillance aircraft in Prince Sultan. Now, you would have seen the images of this plane that has been kind of like split in two. And everybody's made the joke, oh, this was another laundry fire. Let's just explain, why was that plane, okay, in Prince Sultan in the first place? It was there because the radars had already been taken out. If you remember, one of the first things Iran did is it took out all the radars. Well, they stuck this plane there, which had a kind of like backup radar. They've taken that out as well. Aircraft hangars damaged, Patriot radars gone, fuel depots destroyed, and MQ-9 Reaper facilities destroyed, P-8 spy plane infrastructure destroyed. Iranian missiles also hit a chemical factory in the Israeli industrial zone and various other things. In fact, one of the things they hit, which was very funny, and I learned about it for the first time, as did everybody else, is they hit this factory that manufactures puberty blockers. Which led me to joke that, you know, Iran have done more than Trump has ever done to detrans America. So that was that. What else? They've declared that universities are fair game to strike now as we go up the escalatory ladder. They've hit more logistics and ammunition sites, troop hideouts, and various other things. They're constantly hitting things, and it's hard to keep track of all of the different things that are hit. But, you know, you get the idea of what is happening from this summary. Let's now get to the talk of the ground invasion. Now, that there are these troops, including the 82nd Airborne, US Marines. First of all, it was just 1,000, then it was up to 3,500. Now we're up to about 10,000. And everybody's wondering, well, what are these troops for? Now, the big narrative is that it's to capture this place called Karg Island. There's a few other theories floating around as well. So one theory is that they are to take Karg Island. Another theory is that they're actually going to do this kind of Mission Impossible style job, be airlifted deep into Iran to confiscate the uranium that is being enriched somewhere under the mountains in Iran, which sounds like a Hollywood movie style mission. I mean, to be honest, the Karg Island one sounds like a Hollywood movie too. And I've mentioned before that there's quite a lot of skepticism of people looking at this and being like, is that really what these troops are for? Because the numbers don't add up, right? It doesn't add up that an invasion force this small, right, would be for something like Karg Island. They're just going to get massacred, especially if you have a look at the map. And I'm not going to get the maps up. There are tons of military analysts online having a look at this from every single angle. But the overwhelming narrative I've got from all of them is that, even if they took the island, they wouldn't be able to hold it. And even if they did that and the Iranians, started just bombing the shit out of Karg Island, it's in a counterintuitive way, the oil that flows through Karg Island is needed for world oil prices. So if they did that, it would cause an oil shock, because 90% of Iranian oil comes through there. And of course, the oil market in general is interconnected. So it doesn't really matter where the oil's coming from. The global price is the thing that matters. And we're already in a situation where, when I filled up my car this morning, it was £1.55 a litre when I filled up this morning. That's up from like £1.35 at the start of this. And that had already gone up from 120 something. So we're right back up to Rishi Sunak sort of prices already. And, the crisis is kind of just getting started. I've seen reports that in Australia, 500 petrol stations were out, i.e., you're getting shortages breaking out. That is not to mention, and this is related not to Karg Island, but to the Strait of Hormuz. Apparently about a third of the world's fertilizers go through there. And this is causing quite a bit of panic as well for the world food supply. Morgoth, who like runs his own, he grows his own carrots and stuff, has been going on about the fertilizers. But I've noticed that chatter about the fertilizers has increased. They were talking about it on LBC earlier on. I hear John Mearsheimer, who I'm going to play a clip from in a second, going on about fertilizers. So this is another dimension to the crisis there. Still, it does not explain what these troops are actually for. My assessment is that I think it's a feint. I think that they're actually for something else. Maybe they're going to send them to Israel. Maybe they're going to help Israel like fight Hezbollah or something. I don't know, because where are they going to land? What is the actual mission? So that's one scenario, that it's actually not for any of these things that they're going to send them to Israel. A second potential is that, and this is dark, right? But we're talking about Lindsey Graham and people like that here. What if they are intentionally sending these men and women? They are deploying these men and women, up to 10,000 of them, deliberately to go and get themselves killed in order to try to get increased American investment in the war and to lock America in to committing more men, i.e. deliberately doing Vietnam again, deliberately locking America into another Vietnam-style crisis. Who knows? That sounds insane. This is already the lowest support for a war ever. Okay, it is already less popular now than it was in the last year of the Vietnam War, which is the least popular war ever. It's already less popular than that now, and people have not started coming back in large numbers in body bags. Okay, so that I think is a terrible idea, but we're talking about noted military genius Lindsey Graham and friends here, so who knows? Another thing that I think is possible, if they deploy these troops, and it's something like the second scenario, is maybe we won't get large amount of American troops coming back in body bags, because the Iranians, instead of killing them, will take them hostage, and we'll get a repeat of the 1979 Iran hostage crisis, which is what brought down President Jimmy Carter, if you remember, and it was the start of, it was the thing that started, you know, the Reagan revolution back then. I kind of joked President Trump could be the first person to be worse than both George W. Bush for being a warmonger and worse than Jimmy Carter for having an even worse Iran hostage crisis. So it's possible. And that is, again, one of those things that people may have overlooked. Maybe they think, oh, well, we'll send them there and they'll get killed. But what if they're taken hostage? And I think it's probably likely that if they're sent, Iran would seek to take them hostage. They've got previous on doing that. And of course, it gives them additional leverage on top of the leverage. I mean, before the war, Iran had something like 5% of world's oil supply that it controlled. Now that's up to about 20%. I think it's up to 20-25% gas they control just de facto by controlling the Strait of Hormuz. And of course, a third of the world's fertilizer supply. Those numbers would increase if the Houthis shut down the Red Sea, which they've threatened to do. And then on top of that, if they take Americans hostages, that would increase their leverage again. So who knows? Who knows what it is? I have yet to see any serious analyst give that troops on the ground deployment. I've seen people say like the chances of a success are 0% and things like that, or less than 10% chance of success. But Trump is desperate. Trump cannot take an L. Trump cannot admit that he's fucked up, right? So, you know, who knows why he's sending these. And that brings me to the last point that I want to cover today, which is that, you know, I allow myself two copes. One cope is Rupert Lowe. The other cope is that Tucker Carlson is part of a deep state operation, possibly working for the CIA, to detach America from Israel and Israeli influence, and also to undermine what is happening right now. And I think there's all sorts of things that you can point to as evidence for this. The resignation of Joe Kent, the immediate podcast tour that Joe Kent did, all of these former spooks on the airwaves all the time, the British establishment in the mainstream media, former ambassadors, former MI6, former defense ministers, former British military generals, all on TV all the time, counter-signaling what's happening, but also increasingly in America, this is happening as well, where even establishment voices like Robert Kagan are starting to say, well, Israel is a liability. Robert Kagan was one of the original neocon thinkers. I noticed that the Brennan, the former CIA chief, was counter-signaling this. So this is all grist to the mill, that there is quite a lot of meat on the bones forming for my cope, which is that there's some element of the deep state, or quite a big element of the deep state, that is against this, that Donald Trump has gone rogue, that Israel has gone rogue, and that the American deep state is trying to cut off Israel, and eventually they're going to bring down Trump using this. Now, as part of this, listen to what John Mearsheimer said here as I sip my Coke.
Just one final thought. You know, people like us are frequently critical of the deep state, and people on both sides of the political spectrum are critical of the deep state. But the reason that you have a powerful state, the reason you have powerful institutions like the CIA and the Pentagon and analogous institutions in Russia, China, and so forth and so on, is because you need a lot of expertise. You need a lot of people who can help you staff problems. In other words, if you decide that you're going to invade Iraq in 2003, you just can't do it by yourself if you're the president and with a handful of advisors. You have to have lots of experts. You have to have lots of help thinking about how to deal with the problem and how to execute the right strategy and so forth and so on. And the problem with President Trump is he doesn't have any respect whatsoever for institutions, and certainly for the deep state, which he views as a mortal enemy, because he thinks the deep state opposed him in all sorts of ways during his first term. So you have this actually very interesting situation where he does not rely on experts at all. He relies on Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and Lindsey Graham. These people are not serious strategists. These are not people who are capable of.
So I think I'll just leave it there. But reading between the lines, you can see that Mearsheimer is basically saying the same thing that I am, that Trump and the Trump admin have gone rogue, that they're relying on Witkoff and Kushner and people like Lindsey Graham to make really serious decisions against the advice of 18 intelligence agencies and his own four-star general. So hear a bit more of him.
Thinking through how to deal with major foreign policy issues or questions of war and peace. They can't do that. And again, the reason that you have a deep state is because inside that deep state is all sorts of expertise. I don't want to paint too rosy a picture of the deep state here, but there is an upside to having a deep state. And
exactly. Exactly. And this is, look, if the deep state exists and they're being ignored and their analysis, right, is being kind of jettisoned for lunatic decisions taken by Trump, is it that out of the realm of the possibility that same deep state is seeking to bring him down over exactly this, that they're signaling against the war? There have been so many leaks. There have been so much coverage against the war, undermining the war effort. And so many, I mean, let's not forget, Mearsheimer still, you know, University of Chicago, Stephen Walt is still Harvard, right? They're still there. They're writing for Foreign Policy magazine, which is regime central. The Financial Times has taken against this. The Economist has taken against this. It's very interesting to me that we're seeing this separation of the zyosphere, we could say, the zyosphere, and the actual institutions of the deep state and the actual institutions of America, separating from this little nucleus of zio-aligned voices. That's very interesting to me. And I still think when all is said and done, there is an ongoing project to wrap up the, like, they're calling time. They're saying you've had about 80 years of this bullshit now, and we're wrapping it up. Maybe it's a cope. We will see. We will see. But as things carry on, more evidence comes to supply meat on the bones of my cope. It's looking less threadbare as time goes on. Admit it. Admit it. Maybe I'm just coping. We all have to have something to hope for. That's my hope. All right. Thank you very much. Pick up a course for the academic agency. Just going to sprint through what's been happening in the war. I will have, I may even have another video out later on about Tony Blair, who's intervened and said that the alliance between the left and Islamism, as he calls it, has gone too far. What that reveals. That'll be a separate video. I want to review the Goodwin debate. Goodwin debated the guy who exposed that he used AI ChatGPT to write his book. That's going to be so much fun. I'm going to review that. I want to have a look at David Starkey against Jeremy Hunt, where Hunt is confronted on being a Blairite. I want to talk about the rightoid. These are all things. These are all videos that are going to come out later this week or even later on today. But anyway, for now, let me know what you make of what's been going on in the Iran war. Pick up the Mega Bundle. Pick up the Trivium. pick up Foundations of Geometry, and I'll see you all soon. Go on, get out.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.